You're listening to a Connect Inc. Teach Central podcast. I'm Susan Everhart. Our topic today is motivation. And joining me is Dr. Tom McIntyre. Welcome, Tom, and thanks for being here.
All right, thanks for the invitation, Susan.
Tom McIntyre has taught students with behavior disorders and learning disabilities. He is now a professor of special education and coordinator of the graduate program in behavior disorders at Hunter College of the City University of New York. Let's begin in elementary school. We all have a picture of fresh-faced kindergartners so excited to be going to school, and then we hear from our teachers that we have kids that are not motivated and not excited in school, even in first grade, second grade, third grade. What happened?
Yeah, certainly I've looked out there at some dull eyes during my career, and now that I'm raising, at the moment, a 10-month-old and a 3.5-year-old, and you see this innate love of learning, this desire to make sense of one's environment, and then you see kids in the classroom who've lost that bright-eyed wonderment and that internal drive to become more competent, and you wonder, how did the kids fall so far from the learning tree? And often they cause educators to stray a bit far from the teaching tree as we end up pleading with these youngsters and reducing demands or threatening with grades and predictions of a dark and broken future and eventually just leaving them alone. Not that we don't care about our students, but we don't know what to do, and then we lose our motivation. I think primarily what we see is a fear of failure on the part of most kids. There are many reasons that would emanate from the home and internally and biochemically, but the ones that I see repeatedly are, let's address fear of failure first, that the youngster has inadequate skills or an inadequate knowledge base. I think secondary teachers face this a lot as the youngsters are behind in their reading level and aren't able to gather information from the textbook. Their writing skills are low. It could be an undiagnosed learning disability, or perhaps a youngster with a behavior disorder wasn't able to attend to the earlier information, but now that the medication is assisting, the youngster is able to attend but doesn't have the background knowledge. For other kids, they've been ridiculed previously when they perform poorly. It may have been from a parent saying, what are you, stupid? You can't get this grade. Or other students, when the youngster offered an answer, said, oh, that's dumb. That's really stupid. Or a teacher writing on the top of a youngster's paper, inferior work. And the youngster says, you know, maybe it's best not to try at all. It hurts so bad to hear these things when I put forth effort and I'm afraid of failing. And even among our brighter kids, we have many non-motivated kids, and we say, they're so bright, they're so capable, why won't they put forth the effort? And for a lot of them, it's the praise they've received previously. We see this a lot with the youngsters saying, you know, gosh, I've been told I'm gifted, I'm a brainiac, everybody tells me, I have the gift. And then they get faced with work that requires effort on their part. And if a youngster hasn't been told specifically what they have done to be successful, they've just been told, you're smart, they say, gee, for smart kids, this stuff comes naturally. If I have to put forth effort, that proves I'm not smart. And so kids then avoid challenging work, and they seek out less challenging work.
The way we actually believe that we're encouraging students could backfire.
Yes. The praise we use, there are many, we've been told praise kids and they'll respond, and they do respond, but only if we have certain components, certain things in our praise. Oftentimes we sabotage our own efforts with the type of praise we give. And this might be great for another podcast to focus on effective criticism and effective praise, especially with kids who aren't motivated.
A teacher has a student in class who is demonstrating some kind of fear of failure. What does that teacher do?
Well, I think, first of all, that we need to conduct our own functional behavior assessment. If the school-based support team or the Committee on Special Ed aren't involved in their analysis of what is the function, the cause, the purpose, the reason, the drive behind this behavior, then we want to start conducting one of our own. But oftentimes, what we've been taught to do in the way of trying to figure out why this kid is doing what he or she is doing is do the applied behavior analysis ABC evaluation. There's the behavior. What came before it? What's the antecedent? And what just happened after it? The consequence. And that'll tell us what sparks the behavior. and what maintains the behavior. But there's a lot more to that. I mean, certainly we collect information from the home and grade patterns and work products, but with kids who aren't motivated, unless we've got a work product, an essay that says, this stuff isn't important to me, or this teacher stinks, we're really not going to know the reason as to why the kid isn't motivated. The usual functional behavior assessment doesn't work with these kids. And there's, you know, other reasons for kids not being motivated. Oftentimes kids, you know, we talked about praise. Some kids have not received praise when they've put forth effort, and they've learned to seek negative attention. At least when I do this, I get all the trappings of belonging and being important. A teacher comes over. A teacher pleads with me. A teacher spends time with me. A teacher chastises me. I would prefer positive attention, but if I can't get that, negative attention beats no attention at all. And for some kids, they've adopted this as an attention-seeking device. It could be that what's being taught in school they see is being unrelated to their lives, and that can happen now in the time of No Child Left Behind, where so many teachers are required to do this drill and kill to raise the scores on achievement tests. But even then, we can apply what we're talking about to the lives of our kids. That instead of when we're engaged in math, it's Kong Ting and Wei Chu going down to the corner market to buy ginger root and bok choy, or it's Hector and Marissa going down to the local bodega to get red beans and rice and plantains. And we put the situations in a scenario that they can imagine. They can see the importance to their life. You know, I think some of these are just off the top of the head that, you know, we look out at the faces and we remember where they're from or what the primary language is or what they've been talking about out in the schoolyard, what some of their interests are. We hear a little bit about their life, and we look for opportunities to bring their life into what it is we're talking about. So it might be structured ahead of time, but it also might be just spur of the moment, thinking about our kids and how do we get them to see the importance to their lives. One of the major stressors in our job that's been identified is role conflict. Different people, different parties demanding different things of us. And from the administration, it's raise the test scores. From the special education realm, there's individualize for our kids and make modifications. From the parents, it's treat my child differently in some way. This is the way they respond to it. There's what we've been taught in colleges and what we're finding out in staff development that says, oh, what we taught you back then, we just found out something different. And we're drawn in so many directions that can be a major stressor in our teaching.
So in thinking about motivation, do you have a child in mind who is in third grade or in 10th grade?
I guess I hold both of those ages and everything in between and a little bit to either side, that there are some common things we can do in the way of assessing what the reason is and also responding. There are some general principles that we then tweak to the individual.
Well, can you lay out those general principles?
Well, I think first of all, we're trying to figure out why is this youngster failing to be inspired by what it is that we're teaching them. And in that functional behavior assessment, we do some curriculum-based or criterion-referenced evaluation of skills. Where are the holes in this kid's knowledge? And let's fill in that previous information that would lead this youngster to understand what it is we're talking about now. That we give frequent and specific praise for youngsters' actions. We avoid criticism and chastisement, unless it's the type that we'll be talking about, I suspect, in a future podcast. And looking at the type of praise that it is we're giving the youngster, and are we focusing on learning rather than accuracy? That mistakes are a good thing if you're putting forth your best effort. If I can ask a kid, did you just try your hardest? And the kid says, yes, I did. I should be doing backflips. I should be saying this youngster is giving it his or her best. Now, we may have to teach them the skills so that their best is more efficient, but we want to focus on effort rather than accuracy and grades. Because, you know, if we focus on grades, these kids probably aren't getting the best grades anyhow. We can create these strong grades by saying to the kid, giving your best effort. Mistakes are okay. We will learn from them. They're not. It's not failure. It's learning when you've made a mistake. And also creating a sense of belonging. The greatest human psychological need is to be attached to important others in their lives. For most of us, it's family, it's professional groups, it's friends. And kids in an important life situation, 6 hours a day in school, need to feel as if they are attached to the important people in that school, other kids and the teachers. And what teachers need to do is create a positive relationship with non-motivated youngsters, creating a history of positive interactions so that we like each other, supporting the youngster in his or her efforts, being encouraging, saying, I believe in you, I believe in you, I believe in you. Perhaps not in those specific words, but in our actions and the other things we say. And it takes a while to develop this relationship with youngsters, especially those who've had negative experiences in schools with teachers. And they say, I've heard it all before. This is going to be a great year. We're all going to learn together. And then my teachers give up on me. You know, just leave me alone. It takes a while to break through that wall for kids who've been lacking motivation for a while.
I think that will lead us into our next podcast when we talk with you again about the right words for praise and for criticism. And thank you very much for being with us today.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you, Susan.
Tune in to Praise, How to Do It Right on the next Teach Central podcast. I'm Susan Eberhardt. Thanks for listening.